Hi, I'm Max Clark. My team and I have been doing a deep dive on SASE providers lately. Why? Because SASE is awesome, and most of them just suck. I don't know how else to say this. It's late in the day for me, so I'm ready to get spicy, I guess. Let me explain this a little bit more, and we'll come back to the beginning. So what is SASE? SASE is basically you take your firewall, your SD-WAN, you just throw a bunch of stuff together into one pot and you call it SASE is basically what happened. And what those things are, typically it's it stands for Secure Access Service Edge, but what you're taking is you're taking what was going to be an SD-WAN function. You move your firewall typically from your premise, you're buying a big box, you're going to a cloud-based firewall, right? That's what these things get called now, is cloud-based firewall. And you're layering in a bunch of other technology as well, usually Secure Web Gateway, usually probably Zero Trust Network Access, ZTNA, maybe it comes with DLP, maybe it comes with CASB, maybe it comes with RBI and threat intelligence tools, and like depending on your vendor, you're going to get a bunch of different stuff about it. The thing that's awesome about SASE is not only do you get a really good security solution for your office, your physical locations, but you get to deliver the same solution to your remote users. So smaller offices as well as remote users can have the same security stack as your main office location does. And this is why this is valuable, because if you've got somebody working from home or traveling, or you've got a small satellite office, you don't want that to be the weak link in your security structure. Your whole apparatus can go out the window because you've got somebody at their house with who knows what's going on, and then that gets infected and that just has a free rein into your network because something else is going on. So SASE now gives you fundamentally the ability to integrate a lot of this network tool, a lot of this network stuff that you want with security stuff into one thing, and then give that both to your main office locations, your small offices, your satellite offices, and your remote users. And by the way, so now you have your remote users can connect to the internet and securely connect to the internet, browse the internet, not have to worry about them going to malicious websites, downloading bad stuff. If they need remote access to your applications, and this is where ZTNA and CASB, depending what you're actually like, if you're trying to securely connect to Salesforce, technically that's CASB, and if you're trying to get to something in your data center in your own private cloud, that's technically ZTNA. But these things are kind of getting blurry in terms of like what's the one versus the other. It's just becoming kind of like this thing now. I started off by saying that SASE is awesome. Hopefully I've kind of explained why I think SASE is awesome, right? You can now, in the good old days, if you wanted to have a secure remote user, that remote user, let's say, we'll just use simple geographies, right? Let's say that remote user's in Los Angeles and your office is in New York, and that remote user now has to VPN to your office in New York in order to get on the internet. What happens? Well, it basically sucks for them because they have to traverse the entire United States in order to get through your corporate firewall to then go out. And oh, by the way, other things pop up where it's like search engines don't know where they are in the world when they're trying to find stuff by default. And you can fix that, but it's annoying. That's a simple solution. Now imagine that your main office is in, we'll do Seattle. Your main office is in Seattle and you've got manufacturing in Brazil and you've got a development office in India. Okay, now think about that network traffic for a second. Is all of your operations in Brazil going to tunnel back to Seattle in order to get corporate IT policy and have access to your stuff? Oh, and by the way, you have AWS in Virginia, US East 1. Same thing with your India team, or maybe it's some other country, and you've got a team in Romania or Turkey or whatever, right? That is common architecture with old school firewalls, is to have this pinning of traffic traversing huge geographies, and the people on the wrong side of that connection, just life sucks for them because you just can't do anything about the fact that it takes time for things to go across two continents. So this work gets, so again, SASE gets awesome because it gives you a bunch of tooling in one thing, centrally controlled, managed by your provider, updated in real time, aggregated data across their entire, they're just going to see more stuff and be able to protect you against more stuff faster, right? Now, the SASE architecture also means that instead of pinning your traffic back to your office, to your main location, the gateways, key term, the gateways are going to exist in lots of different locations around the globe. Here's the dirty secrets. Most SASE vendors are going to start off by taking and putting gateways inside of cloud regions. So they're going to use Oracle, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Oracle, some of the big footprints. So for instance, Microsoft Azure is really popular for these types of things because Microsoft has regions in Latin America. They have regions in Africa. They have regions in India, right? So maybe you end up with Microsoft. Big negative with this is by using a public cloud vendor, the most expensive thing to do with a public cloud is move data and egress data out of the public cloud. So now you've got a very expensive SASE solution because they're using the most expensive bandwidth known to mankind in that cloud vendor in order to bring stuff in and out. So the second step for the SASE vendor is to start bringing on their own infrastructure. The fastest way to bring on their own infrastructure, when I say infrastructure, I'm talking about them going out and doing what was used to be referred to as dedicated servers or maybe VPSs. And this is my rant, because now they have dedicated server infrastructure located around the globe with a hodgepodge of different providers offering that dedicated server infrastructure. And usually these boxes are just absolute crap. You're talking about cheap processors, consumer-grade hardware, slow bus speeds, chunky hard drives, and here's the key, really slow network connections, like 100 megabit per second flat rate port network connections. Why? Because a dedicated server provider doesn't want to allocate crazy amounts of bandwidth to a dedicated server box where they have a lot of bandwidth risk in terms of pricing. But at 100 meg, even if that box gets used in a DDoS attack or some other who knows what, or gets compromised and is spewing stuff out, it's limited in terms of damage it can do. By the way, almost every consumer-focused VPN platform does the same thing. They go out and they purchase dedicated servers from providers in different regions, or providers that can offer them multiple regions because they have that infrastructure. But again, we're talking dedicated server boxes, and then they're using that to actually be the locations of things and where they go. Why does this suck so much? Well, first off, I don't know about you, but I don't want my network connection for all of my users limited to 100 megabit in today's world. So if you have people with fast internet connections in their house, and you've got a lot of them in a region, let's just say you've got 100 users in the region with reasonable downloads of like 500 megabit cable modems, and now you're going to connect them to a gateway in that region that's got 100 megabit download, what happens? It sucks. Life sucks. And that's why I'm so pissed off right now. How do you this is happening? So, I mean, first off, you should be doing an evaluation. You should be doing some sort of POC, some trial, some month-to-month service, whatever it is with this infrastructure before you're signing a contract. And in part of that, you should be configuring it into a real world where you're putting users in there, connecting users to it, and then you're connecting and building tunnels to that, to your infrastructure, and you're putting everything together. And as soon as you do that, start trying to do some big transfers against it. And what you're going to find really quickly is a lot of them, that transfer is going to saturate at right around 10 megabytes per second, aka 80 megabits per second. And why is that a magic number? Well, that is the magic number because that's what a 100 meg dedicated server and connected interface is going to saturate at. You're also going to see this with QoS policies. Maybe the provider is using QoS as opposed to a physical port. It's a VPS server of type. You're going to see the other one, which is almost even more frustrating, which is the downloads scale up and get to some point and then go, then come back down to almost nothing and then scale back up again. And you get this horrible kind of like sawtooth zigzag experience coming up and down. And it's so frustrating because we have found some just unbelievably great stories, good logos, good interfaces, good tech. And then you get deep into it. Everything sounds right. We ask at this point, like, what's your interface speed so we can connect? Oh, yeah, no problem. We got blah, 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 blah. And then you find out, no, you don't. You lying rat bastard. Other thing that's a big problem is SASE. The way SASE gets implemented is if you've got a permanent location, an office, you have a box that goes into that office. And this can be a lot of different things. It depends on the provider and how they actually do it. It could be like SD-WAN. It could be SD-WAN Lite. It could be no SD-WAN and just like an IPsec tunnel. But you've got some sort of physical box with that VPN, usually, again, creating a tunnel to that provider's nearest gateway, POP, whatever they want to call it, right? Which then is where their infrastructure is running, which is then where bandwidth is coming in and out of. Typical architecture. If you're a remote user, so if you're on your cell phone, if you're on a tablet, if you're on a laptop, if you're at your house, if you're a satellite office with only a few number of users, put in a hardware appliance in order to do this, right? That VPN client is running on that device in order to create that tunnel to the gateway in order to then deliver the service that you've purchased. It is crazy how many of these providers have software agents that get installed that are absolute complete steaming piles of garbage. There's one which, I mean, if you put this software on your cell phone, all of a sudden you wonder why your cell phone battery just goes from 8 hours of life to 2 hours of life. It's because you're running this software on it and the client sucks and sucks all the battery down. So I don't, what sucks about this and also is it's such great technology that's implemented so badly. And if you make the mistake and you accidentally sign up with the wrong one, you're going to think that it all sucks. And let me just tell you, it doesn't all suck. The people that you just got stuck with suck. And there's other ones out there that are way better and actually do what you want to do. And it, life is as awesome as you think it is. I mean, again, one of my favorite pieces of tech in the market today is Sassy, because what it does for you and how transformative it can be for your network and security and remote users and management and everything. It's wonderful. Absolutely go buy a Sassy platform. Do it. Do it tomorrow, right now. Like watching this video, stop watching the video, go buy a Sassy platform. Just make sure you're not getting one that sucks. Okay, ran over. I'm Max Clark. If you have questions, drop me a comment below. Peace.